At Delta, we know Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. On the next flight, 8C is Mandy, a foodie. So we offer all types of food options. Because at Delta, everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
I'm ready to go.
Streaming now only on Peacock. Five rich and famous international soccer stars. They have everything except love.
I think girls in the past have gone for me because of what I've got.
That's why we're going undercover.
We're setting them up with single American women.
They don't know we are famous. They don't know we are rich.
And they'll have to hide their true identity.
What do you do for work?
I'm an ad salesman.
Oh, God. What am I doing?
Love Undercover. New series streaming now only on Peacock.
It's been a wild ride for Bryce Young in the betting markets. He went from the favorite to not the favorite to the overwhelming favorite to be the first overall pick in the draft next Thursday night when the Panthers are on the clock. I was on the clock with him for about 12 minutes yesterday. Here is some of my conversation with Heisman winner and presumptive number one overall pick, Bryce Young. Bryce, we're having this conversation exactly 1 week before the draft. What is your overriding emotion as you are 7 days away from finding out what's next for you?
I'm super blessed to be in this, and you definitely get a little anxious. Your life is going to change. You don't know where you're going to be living, what's going to be going on, what team is you going to be playing for, and for so long, it's coming, but it's kind of far out. But now that being right around the corner, I'm definitely anxious for that day to come and to see what it's going to be. But more so than anything, I'm grateful and I'm blessed to be in this situation. And, I'm trying to enjoy it and be in the moment. But, I'm definitely a little anxious and excited to see what the future holds for me.
Bryce, what was the first moment for you where you realized, based on whatever it was, throwing the ball in a game, in a practice, anywhere, where you thought, I'm pretty good at this and I may have a real future?
That's a good question. I can't really think to a specific time. I don't think I've ever felt, I've always believed in myself and, I've always just wanted to, the next day be better and wanted to push myself to be the best version of myself. But I don't think I ever really had a moment where I felt any higher or lower than that. I think, even in the bad days, I still wanted to push myself and see where I could be and just get better the next day. And even in the good days where things were going really well, I never felt like, oh, I got it, or like I'm there, I haven't figured out. Even then I felt like, I felt like, okay, well, even if this was positive, I still have to do a lot more to improve. I still want to get better. So I don't necessarily think I had that moment of like, oh yeah, I'm going to be good, or this is going to be my future. I think it was just day by day. I realized how much I love this sport and how much I love the game. And, because of that, I think that's really what has pushed me to want to keep being better and keep developing day in and day out.
Okay, so I'm at the point in the interview where I start checking boxes. And, of course, when we talk to Bryce Young, the box we have to check is the height question. But I'm going to try to ask you a different question because it is what it is. I've heard you explain that, and you're right. You've played that way your whole life. So I'm curious about, and I know Drew Brees, and he's explained how he's managed in the pocket to see through and around these giant offensive linemen and defensive linemen who are big no matter how tall you are at quarterback. What do you do when you're back there to manage to see the guys down the field when you have this cluster of bodies in front of you?
Yeah, I think it's a lot about anticipation, knowing where your guys are going to be and then knowing where the defense, would have to be based off of the coverages that they're running. So I think that and, kind of tribute to what Drew Brees said, who is someone that, I've had the honor of meeting and, I've always been a huge fan of his game and what he's been able to do. Tribute to that, it's, kind of trying to find throwing lanes and seeing in between. And again, even when you can't see, it's knowing where people are going to be at based off of understanding the concept, understanding the defense you're getting and knowing, you know, what you have to account for and who you have to account for based off where you're trying to throw. So I think a lot of it, for me is, you know, all that coming into play is kind of, you know, how I process things, whether it's a clean pocket or, you know, there's a bunch of people, you know, getting pushed back into my face.
The other side of this too, and this is the last question I'm going to ask about height and weight. But Tua Tagovailoa, former Alabama quarterback, now with the Dolphins, just yesterday was speaking about the things he's doing to try to better learn how to fall, because you're going to get hit by large guys. You got to fall in a way so your helmet doesn't strike the turf, and he's learning that. What plan do you have to avoid those kinds of issues we've seen with Tua? And have you talked to him about how to avoid striking your helmet against the ground when one of these 275 pound guys pushes you down?
I haven't necessarily had that conversation with him. But I think one thing just in general I can get better at for sure is just learning how to like baseball slide. Because full transparency, I don't like know how to cleanly, efficiently do that. Like I always kind of just got down. I knew eventually it was gonna come a day where I never really played baseball, so I knew eventually it was gonna be a day where I need to learn how to baseball slide. So, you know, I think that you know, I think now is the a great time to attack that. So I think that's something I'm definitely gonna learn how to do.
You can get the whole interview at PFT on our YouTube page and the PFT PM podcast. The baseball slide, very interesting to me, Peter, because just yesterday I mentioned in discussing this with Chris Sims as it relates to Tua Tagovailoa learning how to fall. Mark Sanchez struggled with the baseball slide. Mike Vick refused to even do it. He would do the Pete Rose head first dive whenever he was getting toward the end of a run. I didn't know anything about Bryce Young's ability to slide or not slide, but that's just part of it. Sliding doesn't matter when you're in the pocket and you get shoved and you fall backward. And we saw it last year with Tua. He fell backward, struck his head. He got whipped down by a Bengals defensive lineman, curled around and flung to the ground and struck his head. And it just looks so innocuous as it happens, but you have to find a way to keep your head off the ground. And that's a practical reality for a guy who may very well be playing on the south side of 200.
Mike, I'm going to give every NFL team a piece of advice right now about the baseball slide for quarterbacks. And for quarterbacks who say, well, I can't do that, I haven't done it before, I'm going to take you into when Peter King coached the Montclair Bears, which was a 10 and under travel girls softball team in Montclair, New Jersey, 20 years ago. And I'll tell you what we did every spring, because you're getting some kids who have no idea how to slide. They're playing for the first time. I would wait until the first rainy day in late March, early April, and I would bring out a tarp. And I would say, in essence, okay, let's let this get good and wet. And then I would do the first one. I would do the second one. I'd do the third one. And I would show exactly how you do the slide. It's very, very simple. You tuck your left leg under and you put your right leg out, and you literally just fall down on your rear end while you're running and put your foot out and slide. It is simple. And the only reason I say that is that every time I hear a quarterback say, oh, I can't slide, I've never slid before, you know what I say? Your coaches didn't do a good job with you. I don't care how great you are, whether you had Bill Walsh and every great offensive mind there ever was. A quarterback today had better learn how to slide. And Bryce Young, I'm telling you, I don't care if he never played baseball before. If I'm Frank Reich, if I'm Josh McCown, if I'm Thomas Brown, if I am the coaches on this staff, that's a practice in our mini camp in June. That's it. We are bringing in, I don't care, Ricky Henderson. I bring in somebody to teach this guy how to slide, because that is going to be essential for a guy who's going to play a half inch shorter than Russell Wilson and 2 inches shorter than Drew Brees.
You know, when you live as long as we have, you have many regrets, and I've just discovered I have a new regret. I regret that cell phone video wasn't easily available back in the day when Peter King was teaching the softball team how to slide on a tarp.
How do you know it wasn't?
That would have been that would have been very valuable.
How do you know some sort of video wasn't? Hey, all I can say is I'm grateful we used to do those things in the rain because no parent wanted to be out there to be able to see it. So, yeah, but Mike, seriously. You know, this could be the difference between a guy sliding cleanly, easily. This could be the difference between a guy staying healthy and getting hurt. I am shocked when I hear NFL quarterbacks saying, well, either I don't like to slide, I'm no good at sliding, anything like that. It is simple. It's simple. Just learn how to do it.
Best guy to watch is Kyler Murray. Now, he's gotten away from it, and it's one of the reasons why he's had more injuries as his career's progressed. But his first couple of years, he would do that quick little sudden hook slide anytime, any place, anywhere. He would do
and
it sideways,
right
do it backward.
Up.
And any time he got in any hot water and he realized this is not going to end well for me, he would just, like lightning strike, slide and pop right back up. And, of course, he was a baseball player, so it makes it a little easier for him. But it's something that Bryce Young needs to learn, but it's just part of the equation. That's what surprised me. My focus is how do you fall, not how do you end a run without getting hit. I'm talking about you get hit in the pocket, you get thrown to the ground, what are you going to do? And I'd be talking to Tua Tagovailoa right now if I were Bryce Young about this jiu-jitsu training he's doing in an effort to learn how to fall in a way that doesn't strike your helmet against the turf, because if he's going to be playing under 200 pounds, that's something he needs to be ready for. Okay, so regardless of any red flags about height, weight, whatever, he's the guy. And he talked about anticipation as his way of throwing around these giants who are still big guys no matter how tall the quarterback is. Young goes first. If it's not Stroud second, who do you think it is? Not overall. I'm talking about second quarterback off the board.
Well, all I can say is this, Mike, that, you know, this is the week where I start to get on the phone with people and really ask them, give me your ranking here. Who do you see getting picked here? All those kind of things. And I have to tell you, there is absolutely no consensus after Bryce Young where these quarterbacks go, because I still think that C.J. Stroud has to be considered number two, even with all the questions about him. And Bob McGinn just wrote today about the S2 cognition tests that show how people process information, not just quarterbacks, but all players in a lot of different sports. And Stroud's score on that, according to McGinn, was very low. But I still think you watch the tape, and I still think he's got to be the number two guy in this draft. Somehow, some way, I still think he's going to get picked number two, at least as of now. But I think after that, you have people who are in love with Anthony Richardson. You have people who are scared of Anthony Richardson. You have people who really like Hendon Hooker, think he's the smartest quarterback in this draft, really love him, are not worried about him being 26. I mean, Mike, I think that Hendon Hooker's getting picked in the first half of the first round. I don't know where, and he might get picked around 14, 15, 16, but I just hear too many good things the last few days about him. And if you want him, you're probably going to have to take him by the middle of the first round. And then Will Levis, he is a polarizing prospect. So I am really confused right now. And that's what I need clarity on going into this weekend, being on the phone with people.
I don't like the fact that those S2 numbers get out, no more than I like the fact that the Wunderlich numbers get out, because you'd like to think that those things don't get used against players if they don't come back with an ideal number. And also, it's part of this weaponizing of information to suit an end. You know, anytime I see an anonymous scout talking to anyone in the media, I want to know what team does that scout work for And are they hoping that the player they're talking about will slip down the board so they can draft them? Because we've seen time and again that that happens. So, you know, the film on Stroud, as you said, is great. And Chris Sims has him at number one. He's got a great release. I don't hear people talk about that enough. I mean, it is not quite Dan Marino, but it's pretty damn close the way he gets the football out. One name that we didn't talk about is Anthony Richardson. Sims has him as a guy with superstar potential. But as we get closer to the process, I don't know, it's a lot murkier. There was a time a few weeks ago that's like, this guy could go as high as number three. He could go Young, Stroud in one order or the other, and Richardson at three, and that's really died down as we've gotten closer to the draft.
Yeah, I think the real difficult thing with people about Anthony Richardson is that, you know, he had some clunker games in college football, and he only started for 1 year. He won six college football games, Mike. And I know people say, well, you know, you have to judge him on potential. Yes, of course you do, and if you look at him, you know, he's like 20%, you know, more athletic, stronger, gifted, runner, all that stuff than Cam Newton was. You know, and look at that. It's absurd. It, you know, the guy is just going to be, the day he's drafted, you know, that day, the announcers can easily say, this is the most athletically gifted quarterback in the history of pro football. Even more than Mike Vick and more than Steve Young and more than a lot of these guys who are really, really gifted at the position. But again, you know, his last college game, he's 9 out of 27. He had some clunker games and he only started for 1 year. And I just think there are a bunch of teams that really like him and like him a lot, but you just can't be sure about him because of his relative inexperience. And again, look, if you think that you have a great quarterback coach and you think you have a patient head coach, draft him. Because you know you can stand up at the draft. And look, I disagree with Chris Sims. He told me last week, and I wrote this in my column, people are saying you got to sit Anthony Richardson for a year. And I think that's wrong. I mean, he said you have to play Anthony Richardson right away. And I said, no, I think that's wrong. I think, you know, you're in danger then of him being Zach Wilson, of after 22 games, people never want to see him again. I just think the way to handle Anthony Richardson is to put him in quarterback school for the next 12 months. And then he comes to work opening day of your program in 2024, and he is either the starter or he is competing on equal footing for the starting job.
And, you know, that's an excellent point, too, and that dovetails with something I've been trying to emphasize this year more than any in the past, and maybe it's just a product of if you cover enough drafts, if you cover the NFL long enough, lights begin to flicker that otherwise might never have. But we focus so much on the player when someone is a bust. We need to focus on the circumstance. How was he handled by the team that drafted him? Did they make a mistake by putting him on the field too quickly? Would Zach Wilson have become a franchise quarterback if the Jets hadn't rushed him onto the field? These are things we'll never know the answer to, but we can't just lay it all on the player. It can be the coaching staff. It can be the front office, the supporting cast. It can be as simple as he wasn't ready and no one bothered to raise the question because we've given up so much to get this guy. You're damn straight we're going to use him because the owner wants him out there on the field. Instead of someone pushing back and saying, we're going to be better off over the long haul if we take some time and develop this guy. And I was thinking that same thing with Richardson. He's perfect for a team like the Titans or the Vikings who have their guy this year.
Yes,
it's the Alex
yes.
Smith, Patrick Mahomes dynamic. We have a starter this year. This is a guy that's not just going to sit on the bench. He's going to be in the lab learning, and we're going to get him ready for 2024. Hendon Hooker falls into that category because he's coming off the torn ACL. But I know some of these guys are going to get thrown in right away, and I can't imagine Andy Dalton playing very much, if at all, in Carolina before Bryce Young. But for a lot of these guys, even though we want to see the bright, shiny objects out on the field in their new uniforms playing football, long-term for the team and especially for the player, you got to make that decision to let him sit, and it worked for Mahomes. And
look at what the Bengals did in 2003 with Carson Palmer. You know, they said John Kitten is our quarterback this year. Palmer is going to wait. And he did. And, you know, the earth was still on its axis when Carson Palmer started starting for the Bengals. And same thing with Patrick Mahomes. He had one experimental start in his rookie season. And then the next year, he took the league by storm. So I don't understand. You know, Mike, I'm gonna tell you a quick story. In 1998, I was at San Diego Chargers training camp, and that was the year, obviously, that Ryan Leaf was a rookie. And I was at camp maybe 2 weeks in. I forget when exactly it was, but Ryan Leaf was having some tough days. He wasn't great. He'd have some great moments and then not great moments. And I mentioned to Bobby Beathard, the late Hall of Fame general manager, that, you know, maybe the smart idea is to sit him first and to play, I forget whoever the backup was, to sit him first and then, you know, work him in gradually. And he goes, oh, he's got to play. He said, people have bought luxury boxes. They bought season tickets to see Ryan Leaf, not to see whoever the backup was. I just said, well, okay. And in my opinion, that is, and look, far be it for me, Bobby Beathard has built a 3-time Super Bowl champion in Washington, and he brought the San Diego Chargers to a Super Bowl. So, I mean, it's bizarre and idiotic for me to second guess Bobby Beathard, but I think that is not a smart way to run your franchise. The guy should play when he's ready.
Well, look, either Beathard, and you're right, but just because the guy has done great things doesn't mean he's infallible. He drafted a guy who was either a complete and total bust or his team failed to properly prepare him for life in the NFL. And some of it is on Ryan Leaf, and Ryan Leaf owns it. He doesn't try to run from it. He admits he was a bust. But he's one of the reasons why I've been even more sensitive to the idea that it's not just the kid. It's on the team to understand where he is right now from a football developmental standpoint, from a maturity standpoint. What can he handle? Is he ready? And whatever factors you consider, I guarantee you that last on the list should be we've got fans that have purchased luxury suites under the assumption that Ryan Leaf is going to be playing.
No question about it. But again, we can say that now, you know, and in fairness to Beathard, you know, that's 25 years ago. And I doubt sincerely that they would have the same feeling today. And Mike, you know, we talk about some of the dings and the knocks that CJ Stroud is getting right now. Can you imagine the dings and the knocks that Ryan Leaf would have gotten with the modern NFL media and the microscope on all of these guys coming out of college? I mean, what would the story have been if someone goes to Great Falls, Montana, to write the Ryan Leaf story before the draft in 2018, or to do the Ryan Leaf investigative reporting and find out that, you know, basically he's persona non grata in his own town, you know, he's not well liked in his town or whatever. After all this thing came out, you know, you found out all these skeletons. But again, I just think that today, these days, the lesson now is only 2 years old. And it looks like the Jets played Zach Wilson before he was really ready. And so I just look at this whole thing and I say, whoever drafts Anthony Richardson, you might determine out of training camp that he's so super confident that we're not going to damage him if we throw him to the Wolves. Maybe you will. I don't know. But you ought to be open-minded enough to stand up on the night of the draft and to face the cameras and to say, we are going to make the decision that is going to be best for Anthony Richardson and this franchise for the next 15 years, not for the next 15 months.
You know, we need to take a break, but something you said really intrigued me, and I had never thought of it this way. But Ryan Leaf may have benefited from all the scrutiny that a prospect now gets, because at the end of the day, he just needed to grow up. And plenty of guys need to mature when they've been coddled their whole lives because they're great athletes and they're never made to be accountable and no one ever says anything to their face that maybe needs to be said to their face. Maybe the scrutiny, both internally and externally, that he would have gotten from the media in the run-up to the draft would have been the thing that caused him to grow up a little bit. Maybe that's all he needed to get himself ready to play in the NFL. Regardless, the Chargers blew it. We know it now. And we know that going forward, somebody's going to blow it. Somebody's going to make the wrong pick or fail to properly develop him at the quarterback position. Look at 2018. Look at who worked out. Look at who didn't. That's just the way it is. We all look at glass half full as the draft approaches, but the water starts draining out of the glass for a lot of these guys not long after their pick. Let's take a break. There's more than glass half full for Bijan Robinson. The debate continues over how high is too high to take a guy like Bijan Robinson. We'll talk about that when PFT Live continues right after this.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on Auto Trader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.
I'm ready to go.
Streaming now only on Peacock. 5 rich and famous international soccer stars. They have everything except love.
I think girls in the past have gone for me because of what I've got.
That's why we're going undercover.
We're setting them up with single American women.
They don't know we are famous. They don't know we are rich.
And they'll have to hide their true identity.
What do you need for work?
I'm an ad salesman.
Oh, God. What am I doing?
Love Undercover. New series streaming now only on Peacock.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record! For the United States, unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics, this summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
You know, talking to a scout who said you're a top five talent. But you won't. But you won't go in the top five,
right? Yeah, I mean, you know, I understand. You know what people are thinking and what people say. You know, I believe that any team that gets me is such a blessing, and I know that God's gonna put me in the right position, no matter where I'm at. But you know, I can't think. I can't change what people are thinking. You know, a team has where I'm gonna be at, and a team knows where I'm gonna be at. And if that's in the top 10, if that's not, then it's going to be a blessing either way. So I'm just trying to enjoy the moment. And, you know, people are going to have opinions, but, you know, we all don't know. So we're just all going to see, you know, in a week.
That's Texas running back Bijan Robinson with Dan Patrick. And it's amazing to me. There's a common thread when these guys are asked questions like that. They are so wired, Peter, to submit to this process. They have no choice. They have no choice. They got to pick their college, and we see more and more guys picking colleges midstream, transferring here, transferring there, and then all of a sudden, you're in this mode where you have no control over the process whatsoever, and you could just see it ooze from Bijan Robinson. If you watch the Bryce Young video, I asked him about, you know, you were going to go to USC, and then you went to Alabama. You ever think, boy, it'd be nice if I get to choose where I go in the NFL? And he had kind of a knowing laugh, and they just submit. They have no choice. It's kind of a weird thing, but you just have to go along with the ride. You're strapped into the roller coaster, and it's going to take you where it takes you.
Hey, you know, Bijan Robinson is such an interesting story. And look, I'm not necessarily right on this. I have written and said and gotten tomatoes thrown at me because I have said, in my opinion, the Philadelphia Eagles at number 10 with a gift draft pick, that cost them almost It was almost handed to him on a silver platter last year in the trade with New Orleans. Okay. And this is why Howie Roseman is so good at his job, because he understands that I am building a team for the long haul. So you almost have this bonus pick right here. And there's been this great debate, Mike. Well, geez, you know, Bijan Robinson, you're almost certainly you're not going to sign a running back to a second contract. So let's just say for the sake of argument, you have Bijan Robinson either for 4 or 5 years, because you're right. You almost certainly will not sign a running back to a second contract. Well, I guess I would just say, what about, you know, Andre Dillard and Jalen Reagor? Did you sign them to second contracts? There is a bust factor in the first round of an NFL draft that it doesn't matter how great a general manager you are. And Howie Roseman is great at his job. You are going to bust on some picks. Sometimes you're going to pick Jalen Reagor instead of Justin Jefferson. That's just the way it goes, okay? And all I'm saying is that, can you imagine if for 3 or 4 years you get a guy who is a significant, not a minor, but a significant help to you to get you to another Super Bowl, and at the same time will cost you an average of $5.5 million on the cap over a 4-year period. Obviously, that jumps up if you exercise the 5th-year option and have to pay him more in the 5th year, which who knows, you might do, but you might not. And the last thing I would say about Bijan Robinson is I had a note in my column this week, and I had a video in my column this week, Mike, of Bijan Robinson in traffic out of the slot as a slot receiver making a contested one-handed catch at the 5-yard line against Iowa State that if it were Justin Jefferson, it would be on every highlight on ESPN that night. And so when I talked to Steve Sarkisian, the Texas coach, about him, and he said, you know, I get in trouble for saying this. He had the best hands on our team last year. And wide receivers don't want to hear that. But I've talked to people in the league who said, if you want to, there could be games, matchup games, that you would play in the NFL. And you would take Bijan Robinson out of the running back slot for maybe 15 to 20 snaps a game. And you would play him as a wide receiver. You would play him in the slot. You could even play him outside. And my only point about this is, I understand that we always want to think of the long term. And you know what, Mike? If you could get Peter Skoronski to plug in for the next 10 years at right guard, do it. Go ahead, do it. It's a smart pick by Howie Roseman. But all I can say is, you're going to be awfully tempted, and you should be awfully tempted, if you're the Philadelphia Eagles at number 10, or if you're any team looking for a home run hitter early in this draft, you're going to be tempted, even though you know that this guy may not be a long-term guy for you.
The fact that competent running backs are available in every round of the draft and undrafted, as Austin Eckler was, has raged this debate over whether or not you actually use that first round pick on a running back. Here's a mashup of various decision makers in the NFL on where they land as to this question of whether or not you use a first round pick at a position where you can find a guy who does that job anywhere in the draft. Have a listen.
I understand the narrative about that, but if you think that player is that good, then if he's out there producing for you, then I don't think anybody's going to look back and say, I don't think anybody said in 2016 or 17 or 18 that, oh man, Todd Gurley picked him at 10. Like, no, it's just, he was just a really good running back. And, you know, he was one of the top prospects in the draft. So, we didn't really bat an eye about it.
Just in general, any position group is hard to eliminate. You start eliminating it, you can't get to 28. So if you say we're not going to take a running back, or we're not going to take a tight end, or we're not going to take a receiver, or we're not going to take, once you eliminate a position group or two, you can't get to 28 anymore, and you end up with third and fourth round picks in your top 28.
For us here is that we get we utilize this opportunity to get a unique player for our team. You know, certainly not planning to be picking at this point in the near future. That doesn't mean, you know, obviously things happen, but we're not planning for that. And so we understand how important it is to get this right. And how do you get it right is you make sure you get a unique player.
Steven, you ever sitting in your office and looking out at the practice field and thinking to yourself, man, I can totally see Bijan Robinson running behind our offensive line?
Well, Bijan's just had a great career at Texas. Certainly, I think I don't think I've seen any set of circumstances that he's not a first round pick. That's off to him, and certainly a guy. I'm sure when you know that first day is over, he's gonna certainly have a team, and you never know.
Oh, it would be something if he ends up with the Cowboys, but 26 is probably going to be too low to get him. I was on 105.3 The Fan yesterday, and that's the station where Stephen Jones made those comments, and they're already on the bandwagon of what does it take to trade up, how far do you have to go, and that's the balance. Peter, 2005, there were three running backs taken in the top five: Ronnie Brown, Cedric Benson, and Cadillac Williams. We are a long way from that. There hasn't been a guy taken higher than 24 since Saquon Barkley in 2018. You had Najee Harris, you had Josh Jacobs at 24. Last year, there was no first-round running back at all. That's the balance. When do you pull the trigger on a running back? And when it's a guy who's one of the top talents in the draft, who cares if he's a running back? I'm a firm believer that there's going to be a playoff contender that gets Bijan Robinson next Thursday night. And what we're going to be talking about Friday morning is that team's a Super Bowl contender now with Bijan Robinson.
Could be. I mean, it depends who takes him. If Tampa Bay takes him, I'm not saying it. If Washington takes him, I'm not saying it. I think it depends on who takes him. But I do think that Philadelphia, for instance, and obviously they had Bijan Robinson in for a visit, and I do think that if Philadelphia takes him, they add a weapon that is going to make their offense increasingly and maybe incredibly hard to stop.
Well, and part of this, too, when you heard the sound there, they'd like nothing more if they're of the mindset of you can find a running back anywhere. Wherever those teams are drafting, they would rather the teams in front of them draft a running back because that pushes the players down the board they'd rather take. Yeah. So that's part of the psychological dance of the pre-draft conversations that are had by every team. It's required they all have these pre-draft press conferences. But when you have a player who can be as dynamic as Robinson, when you talk about him playing in the slot, you move him away from that scrum of bodies, you reduce the injury risk over what it is when you're just banging into the line. And that's the problem. Saquon Barkley, he had the talent to be the second overall pick in the draft. But because of the position, it was inevitable he was going to get injured. You can't just say it's his fault. It's the position's fault. So when you have a position that you know generates more injuries than any other on the field, that's a reason not to use a top five, top 10 pick, even if it's a top five or a top 10 talent, especially when the gap between the top five talent and the other running backs out there isn't quite as great. And you can, you know, if you block for the guy, if you know he's going to hold on to the football, if you trust him to pick up blitzers, he can still be a very good running back in the NFL. He may not be Bijan Robinson when he's healthy, but he can still be good enough that we can address other positions. That's the dance. That's the problem. And that's what makes it fascinating, because I think Robinson is the best running back prospect since Barkley. So where does that land? I don't know. Do you have a sense of where the sweet spot is, where the window opens, where the window closes on Robinson?
If you ask me what the over-under is on where he'll be picked, Mike, and keep in mind that I think this is one of those things that you look at it and you say, okay, where's the sweet spot for Bijan Robinson? Okay, most people would probably say Philadelphia at 10 is too high. New England at 14 doesn't really fit Belichick, but Belichick is a strange drafter, so you never know. My thought right now is that I think that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at 19 and right in that area. I'd say the over-under on Bijan Robinson, to me, is probably about pick number 20. Now, Seattle has pick 20. I don't think they're taking him because I think they're in good stead there. It wouldn't shock me if the Chargers at 21 took him, especially because of what we're seeing and what we're hearing now with Austin Eckler. But right around 20 would be my over-under for him.
Boy, and let me tell you, if the Chargers take him, that's a prime example of a team where the vibe becomes dramatically different if they take Bijan Robinson. You pair him up with Justin Herbert and those receivers, even though Austin Eckler is no slouch, just that high-end potential for Bijan Robinson would make people say, wow. I'm fascinated by the Buccaneers. And see, this is where, when we get to the off-season churn of sound bites, you've got Jason Light, the GM of the Buccaneers, talking up Rashad White as a potential stud for them. And, of course, White is going to sign on to that. He wants to be that guy. You can have a lot of players who think they have a certain standing within the team who find out otherwise on Thursday night. And Rashad White,
that always happens.
I think back to 5 years ago. I know, but it's just, it's one of the fascinating human dynamics of this. I think back to 5 years ago when Joe Flacco was scheduled to appear and I think did go through with it. Some Ravens draft experience the day after they drafted Lamar Jackson. It's like, oops, that got a little awkward, but that's just part of the reality of having that new crop of players every single year. Receiver's been a position where teams have found great players in more abundance than ever in recent years. And, you know, I've asked plenty of people about this in the league. The explanation is simple. All those 7-on-7 camps, all those quarterbacks out there developing and throwing passes, someone's catching them. Those players are developing. They're getting better. Last year, 6 first rounders in the receiver position. 21, there were 5, and 20, there were 6. This year, though, I don't know. How many do you think are going to go? There's only maybe one that is clear cut, especially because it's almost like the running back position. You're finding receivers at the later rounds. There's no need to reach for a receiver in round one. How many do you think make it off the board next Thursday night?
I think 4. And the reason is that, look, if you're, let's just say, the New York Giants at 25, you know that you have Wandale Robinson coming back, and you know what a huge threat that he was supposed to be for the whole season last year. And I still think that if you look at the Giants, regardless of their acquisitions and who they could line up with opening day, I still think the Giants, if I'm looking at them right now, their biggest position of need is wide receiver. And if you are drafting at 25, that is right in the sweet spot of when the Zay Flowerses of the world are going to get picked. It looks as though Jaxon Smith-Njigba is going to get picked somewhere, you know, 17, 19, 21, somewhere in there. That's another candidate, I think, for the Chargers. So he's probably, I think he would certainly be picked somewhere in the upper 70% of the first round, somewhere in there, the upper 2/3 of the round. But then after that, I think it becomes a matter of choice. And I think the two guys who I feel confident are going to get picked in the round are Zay Flowers of BC and Jordan Addison from USC. I've heard a lot about Jordan Addison this week, Mike, in this way, that I had one general manager say to me, look, this guy caught 100 balls at Pittsburgh with Kenny Pickett in 21. And then he transferred for the first time in his life, steps foot in the state of California, brand new offense. And obviously it's a different thing. He basically, I'm sure that part of his decision, maybe most of it was NIL money, but whatever the whole reason was, he's got to learn a brand new offense and a weird new offense. Obviously much different than the offense he ran at Pitt, and he comes out and he catches, I think, 59 balls, has a bunch of touchdowns, and it really becomes a threat. That plus the fact that he's an engaging guy, he's easy to coach, he wants to be coached, And I think he has shown well in a lot of these off-season interviews and meetings with teams. And I think he and Zay Flowers are probably the best candidates other than Jackson Smith and Jigba to go in the first round.
There was a story that I noticed over the weekend. CBS was reporting that Quentin Johnson, the TCU receiver, wasn't invited to Kansas City specifically because the league wanted to avoid him slipping out of round one altogether. And it's hardly an exact science. We've seen guys who sat in that green room a lot longer than expected, but apparently the NFL is sensitive to that now, and that's one of the reasons why Johnson wasn't invited. We're going to take a break. When we return, Sean Payton on how both Bill Parcells and Nick Saban have influenced his scouting abilities. We'll discuss that when PFT Live continues right after this.
Sean, you know, he sits in all our meetings. He sounds like a scout. He's been around a lot of really good people throughout his career. He reminds me of Coach Saban, you know, just sitting in meetings the 2 years I was with Coach Saban. You know, they have a similar, vision of how they want to build the football team. They have a clear vision on how they want to build the team.
What I learned from Bill, I couldn't talk about in just one question or one press conference. There were certain things he'd look for. I thought he was someone who was obviously a Hall of Fame head coach, but a real good personnel guy. He enjoyed that process. You know, there were certain prototypes he looked for at positions, and I think the one thing he was really good at, he enjoyed those evening afternoons sitting in a room discussing players. If you really, it's easy to look at the key plays or the highlights. You guys might have an opinion on some players in this draft, and they're probably based off of maybe 15 or 18 snaps. You know, for us, I mean, last night we probably watched 1,200 snaps of three players, and almost, you know, going back even a season ago, because you really are trying to get the totality of what's coming in the building.
The appropriate follow-up question to that would be, which three players? I don't think Sean Payton would have answered. But if they're watching 1,200 snaps of three players, I would say those three players are under serious consideration, Peter, to be drafted by the Denver Broncos.
Well, I just think that at this point, the Denver Broncos might pick a quarterback. I think their last pick is in the sixth round. And who knows? You can obviously pick up more picks, and they just signed Jarrett Stidham, who Payton is really smitten with. So I would doubt that they're going to do anything other than a late round pick at quarterback, but I could definitely see him doing it because I think, yeah, there it is, 195. Because Sean Payton, he is like a Ron Wolf type in that Ron Wolf always wanted to have a rookie quarterback in his quarterback room every year. You're always churning the team. You're always developing a quarterback because you just never know. That's how they got Matt Hasselbeck. So sometimes it's Matt Hasselbeck, sometimes it's Ronnie Makeda, who was, I think, from Army, and he just was not an NFL player. But my point is that I think there's a decent chance in the sixth or seventh round that Denver takes one. But I think the one thing that Payton has done so far this offseason, and let's get away from the whole sacred cow thing, which he's not going to have any sacred cows. But I believe that the one thing he has done is he has said to his team, in effect, there will be competition every day. And it's not going to be like Pete Carroll says, oh, competition Wednesday, where you know who's going to win and all that stuff. And I'm not saying that Russell Wilson is in any danger at all, because I don't believe he is. But I also believe that if you get to the midpoint of this season and Russell Wilson is playing like he did at the midpoint of 2022, that I won't be surprised to see Jarrett Stidham. And I won't be surprised to see a late-round quarterback get a few snaps at some point if they think he's ready, just because they want to see what they got. Payton is going to make absolutely sure that he has another option at quarterback, because you just never know. He did it with Taysom Hill in New Orleans, and later with Ian Book, and Book ended up not working out the way he had hoped, but he'll always have options at quarterback.
One other thing that Peyton said about Parcells, and we saw it from the Broncos in free agency, we could see it in the draft. He said Parcells felt the offensive line was one of the most important positions on your roster because it permeated the building. He didn't say it had to be done in the draft or in free agency, but he felt like that position group was important. And look, you don't get the most out of your quarterback if your quarterback doesn't have time to throw. And so watch the Broncos try to upgrade that offensive line to give Russell Wilson a little more time. We have a little more time in the program. We'll take a break. When we come back, more PFT Live.
For the world's greatest athletes,
this is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again! Gold for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen
an Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics, Friday, July 26th on NBC and Peacock.
At the theater, more than the movies come to life. Movie lovers march in and skip the line with digital tickets to the latest movies on the free Fandango app. Ready to grab some snacks.
Pick me!
And head to the best seats in the house for a night of romance, terror, and quality family screen time. Visit Fandango.com or download the app today for your ticket to the movies.
The Premier League is built on hope. The hope of discovering a new star.
It doesn't take long for Darwin Nunez to make an impression.
The hope of rewriting history. Of continuing a dynasty.
Unstoppable week after week.
This is the Premier League on NBC, USA, and Peacock.
Just like I've been saying all the time, when you're picking the top 10, you just want to make sure that you're pretty thorough on the quarterback market. And I believe that we have done that. And so we have a good idea. It's always going to be a surprise on draft night. That's what makes it fun. But, you know, we'll definitely be prepared. And got an idea, but just don't know if curveball might be thrown.
Brad Holmes, Lions GM. They had that top 10 pick courtesy of the quarterback trade from a couple of years ago. Jared Goff for Matthew Stafford. And the Lions picked up two first-round picks and a third-round pick. They have the Rams first-rounder for this year to wrap up that trade. And look, Peter, even if you're not thinking about taking a quarterback with that sixth overall pick, I think Holmes' point is you have to do the work on the quarterbacks because if the opportunity comes to trade, the more you know about the quarterback that someone would be trading up for, the better informed you are in the trade conversation to get full value. You know why that team wants the guy, and you can push back when they try to lowball you because you know what the guy does well, and you know why that team wants to come get him.
One of the things that makes the Detroit Lions such a compelling team in this draft is their extra picks in the first and second rounds, meaning that, you know, in the top 81, they've got five picks, as you can see right here. And in the top 81, for instance, the San Francisco 49ers have zero picks. And this is how the league gets turned. Okay, Mike? This is what happens when Jared Goff plays, as he did in 2022, surprisingly well. And he made Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell say, wait a second, we can use our two twos and our two ones on players other than quarterbacks. Now, it'll be interesting. What happens if C.J. Stroud is there at number six? Doubt he will be, but what happens if he is? What happens if they're smitten with one of these guys and they say, the value is just too great, we got to take him here, we're going to have Jordan Love here, basically, and Jared Goff's our guy, but this guy we think is going to be really good long-term, and we want to go into business with them. Now, I doubt that's going to happen. But I guess my point overall would be, Mike, that Jared Goff's play in 2022 allowed the Detroit Lions, if they choose, to buttress a rising roster with four more, relatively speaking, cornerstone players, because guys in the first and second rounds are really considered the guys who you're building with long term. And Brad Holmes is got to be thinking of himself, he's the luckiest man on the face of the earth, because Goff is worked out, and now they're able to fix some positions. They're able to take another corner, let's say. And they're able to fix some positions that need fixing. And Mike, I know this is going to sound really knee-jerk, but I'm thinking really seriously of picking the Lions to win that division. I don't think it would be a shock. I'm picking them. I may pick them to win a playoff game or two, because I think they are a fascinating team in a weakened division as we look forward to 2023.
It's there for the taking. They're the betting favorites to win the NFC North, and they haven't won a playoff game since 1991. I remember they commemorated the 25th anniversary of their last playoff win. My reaction was, probably not something you want to draw extra attention to, that it's been that long since you won in the postseason, but that could change this year. Let's go ahead and take a break. When we return, what will we be talking about 1 week from today? That is our Crystal Ball Friday draft. We'll do that next here on PFTY. Who is that? Whose body am I on? But who's, because that kind of looks like me, but that's not me. That's not me. Is that me? Peter, is that you? It's not me.
That must be me because it's slim and attractive.
I still don't know who that is. That was from last week when we were having some fun about one of my most recent lapses in memory. I'm always concerned that it's the beginning of the end when I have a simple lapse in memory now as 58 is approaching. Okay, so the draft is approaching. A week from today. What is the stuff we'll be talking about after one round of the draft is in the books? Peter, you go first.
Wow. I think the biggest story 1 week from today is who drafts CJ Stroud. Because I think it is, as we sit here 1 week out, 6 days out, the biggest mystery of the first round. And I think, Mike, the one thing about Stroud right now that is the most compelling, it happens every year. Who's going to ignore the noise and take a chance on a hugely gifted player? It has kind of shifted from Jalen Carter to CJ Stroud. But my number one priority a week from now is going to be who takes C.J. Stroud and why, and maybe more importantly, who passes on C.J. Stroud.
And I'm going to broaden it a little bit, even though I don't want to be repetitive of what your pick was, but I know this is always the A number one story. How many quarterbacks went and who took them? 2, 3, 4, 5, I think back to 2018. Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, good Lord. And Lamar Jackson. How many of those guys are going to pan out? One of the realities.
Did you say
draft,
good Lord?
One of the,
with Josh Rosen.
I said good Lord. Yeah. But one of the realities of the draft, and look, we see this every year. It's always glass half full. It's always guy is going to be great. Here's why this guy's going to be great. Here's why that guy's going to be great. Here's why that guy's going to be great. And that's fine. I'm fine with the people who are working the draft not raining on the parades of these kids who have finally ascended to the NFL. But look back to 2018, for crying out loud. 2 out of 5 worked out. 2 out of 5, 40% success rate for the quarterbacks taken in that year of the draft. So we're going to be talking about the quarterbacks, and we're going to be trying to figure out who's going to work, who's not going to work, who's going to sit for a year, who's going to play right away. But that's going to be the dominant topic. Stroud and all the others next Friday morning.
Mike, I think, first of all, I want to just add one little factoid of the weekend. And that is that, how does it feel to know that Josh Rosen was picked higher in a draft than Patrick Mahomes was. I mean, we can say whatever we want about the Arizona Cardinals, and the Arizona Cardinals, essentially, their franchise going down in flames. But, man, that is one heck of an interesting pick, taking Josh Rosen 10th overall. I'll say my next one would be Jalen Carter, because he started the draft season as the guy who we're not really sure about, having to go home from the combine, tail between his legs to face these charges, and then to plead no contest to very serious charges. And so to me, I think Jalen Carter would be my next one.
Next one for me, and look, this takes some liberty with what we're trying to do here, but it is what we're going to be talking about next Friday morning. I guarantee you, does Aaron Rodgers get traded Friday afternoon or evening? That's going to be one of the top stories. Here we go. The Jets aren't giving up the 13th overall pick to the Packers. We know that. If the trade's going to happen, it's going to happen on Friday, and it could happen as late as a second-round pick on the clock that the Packers get. It could happen late afternoon. I've put the over-under at 6 p.m. Eastern for the deal to get done, but that's what we're going to be talking about, because after all this time of discussion and speculation and could other teams get involved, it's going to be Jets, it's going to be Rodgers, it's going to happen next Friday, and we're going to be talking about it on Friday morning.
Yeah, my over-under would be actually 7:30 Eastern time, because I think this is going to go on the clock. And look, Brian Costello in the New York Post just wrote this morning that indeed the hang-up is a 2024 first-round pick, which the Green Bay Packers want. And if you're the New York Jets, and that is indeed what the hang-up is, you're going to give them a 2 this year. That's already, people pretty much know that. And if the Packers want a 1 next year, I'm just telling you, Mike, I wouldn't do it. And I would exit the draft next weekend with Aaron Rodgers being the big matzo ball hanging out there for the Green Bay Packers. Okay, you can say whatever you want about us. You can say that we better give a 1 next year in 2024, or we're not going to have Aaron Rodgers. I'm telling you, if you're Joe Douglas, if you're Woody Johnson, if you're Robert Saleh, you've got to be solid enough as an organization. You really do. You've got to be firm as decision makers to be able to say, we are not paying a 1 and a 2 for a guy who might only play 1 year. Not going to do it. Oh, I got to pick something
else. What else,
sorry,
Peter?
All right. Okay, here's the last thing I would say. The number of receivers in the round, because I think it could be as few as 3, I think it definitely will not be more than 4.
I was going to say here, Bijan Robinson, who gets him? Where does he go? How much of a lift does he give the team? But we already talked about that. I'm going to throw another one out there that has nothing to do with what happens on Thursday night, but will have everything to do with what we're talking about on Friday. Who's going to make a play for Trey Lance, if anyone? Because I think day 2 of the draft is going to be the Trey Lance zone. If someone is going to put a package together who didn't get a quarterback that they wanted, you're emerging from the draft, round 1, not addressing the position. So what do? You pivot to Trey Lance if you're interested in him, if you were interested in him a couple of years ago, because he's clearly in play in San Francisco. All right, let's take a break. Another guy who still could be in play in San Francisco, or Miami. Chance to shoot down any chatter yesterday. Opted not to do it. We'll let you know what we're talking about once the Get to Live continues.
By chance, is there any chance that you're coming out of retirement and playing for the Finns?
Oh, man. I know, honestly.
I'm just saying. You got to...
Well, I will say, now that I'm not affiliated with any team anymore, and even though I have strong ties with a couple teams, I do have some friends on the Dolphins that I really like, so I wouldn't say I necessarily root for them all the time, but I root for my friends to do well, and several of them play for Miami, so.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Tom Brady yesterday speaking at the Miami Beach Convention Center at Emerge Americas. Peter, he had a chance to shoot it down. You coming out of retirement to play for the Dolphins. He didn't say no. And that's an area where you just say no. And you can say no and then make your stupid joke that really wasn't funny, but they laughed because it's Tom Brady and they had to. Why didn't he just say no?
Conspiracy Mike is on the case. I don't know. I can't get into this story. I guess I just feel like he's not playing football again. And when I see some signs that he will, then I will start to use my brain cells, you know, that then will exercise in that way. But I just don't think he's playing.
To me, the sign is they ask him a simple yes or no question and he doesn't say no. That's the sign for me. There it is. Enjoy your weekend. See you Monday.